Hello, everybody. Welcome to a super special spoopy edition of Retronauts Micro. I say spoopy because it's not actually scary. It's silly and spooky at the same time. I'm in the Laser Time bedroom studio. Who's here with me?
Henry Gilbert. Howdy do.
And who else do we
have? Gomez Antista.
Gomez Antista. That's a fine Spanish-style mustache you're growing there, Chris.
It's Henry.
Henry.
Yeah. So I'm bad at clicking my finger.
By the snapping and, you know, the cover art and the title of this podcast, you probably realize we're talking about the Addams Family, but more importantly, we're talking about Fester's Quest, which is the first, I believe the first Addams Family game, pre-movie. 2013, Chris and Brett and I, maybe Ray was there too, we did a podcast about two LGN games, Friday the 13th and Jaws. This is kind of a sequel. This is our Halloweenish episode. Fester's Quest isn't scary, but it's kind of bad scary.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do an episode about this game because got problems with it.
It's just astonishing, though.
It is. It's really interesting. I mean, for as much as I don't enjoy playing it, I find it a very interesting game to talk about and read about.
Yeah. I'm trying to find an analog for someone younger than me. Kids, that's like if somebody made a game, a PlayStation 4 game, out of Family Matters, and it starred Carl Winslow.
That's funny. I was going to say like, Family Ties.
Like, that's family this, is, is, this is what nobody's favorite character is Uncle Fester.
It's weird. He would go on in 2 years after this game to be the center of the movie.
Finding him in the first movie.
Yeah, but he was like the central character, I think.
I guess so, considering the play was plot-based.
But the timing of it, too, is all off because, like, there wasn't a movie.
Yeah, there wasn't a movie.
So it was just reruns of a 25-year-old TV show.
Yeah.
Crazy. And I'm on here primarily because I don't love. I was asking you what this game's legacy is. I played it. I got frustrated. I put it down, and I never walked. That was weird. I don't need that in my life. You were talking about how notorious it was. I am here to make up for Henry. You did a Laser Time with us recently about horror comedies. Not one fucking person mentioned Addams Family, and I'm holding everybody responsible for that because that is one of the greatest horror comedies of all time.
Yeah, I guess I just thought of it as a comedy.
I do think the movie amped up the horror a lot more than the TV show. It's like the threat of death was in the movie by people visiting their house. In the TV show, it was just like silly, like there's a thing under the stairs. That could be the Munsters.
We talked about it off mic, but the movies were just sort of like, I hate saying, excellent world building.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if you could see somehow what. You know how Oscar the Grouch just likes gross things and like, I love to hate and like, none of this makes sense and we can't see inside your trash can or what your world looks like. But the Addams Family lets you in. Not just a family, but they have a party with grotesque monsters and people and like, what a cool thing.
And great production design.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Addams Family, like how it began.
Yeah.
First.
It
began when Uncle Fester farted, right?
In case you don't know. I guess if you're young, you could think this was like a movie first in the early 90s, way, way long ago, but it actually started as a New Yorker cartoon back when New York cartoons were funny, you know, back then. It started in 1938, ran until 1988. This is a one-panel cartoon, and there were 150 of these created by Charles Addams before he died. So over the course of 50 years, 150 ran. What is that, like 3 per year? So they weren't that prolific, I think.
Yeah, but when you see them all in a book, they are.
It's really like impressive.
All bound together. And they had no names, though. They were just Addams Family, like he made them.
Yeah, named them after himself. And I think the most famous one you'll probably see reprinted is a movie theater full of crying people and Uncle Fester is in the audience laughing. It's like, that's the joke.
It's so funny. And speaking of New Yorker cartoons and video games, you guys see the recent one did you guys see the one with Scorpion telling Hillary Clinton, finish it?
Yes, I was like, you're really reaching out to the kids 25 years ago, guys.
They had a game last year. It's all good.
Yes. The Addams Family is actually just a family of weird sadists.
We don't need to take it there. I was always a Munsters guy.
Oh, okay.
Addams all the way, baby.
In hindsight, yes, but like, dude, they were all different monsters for real.
So to a child, the Munsters, this is the great Munsters
they have a
Addams
cool car.
Family debate. So as a child, Munsters was more for kids too. Like, because the dad in it is a kid. He's basically like a big kid. And you do get to see all these different famous monsters in one show. Mm-hmm. And also Grandpa's a fun guy. Grandpa Munster. But as I grow older, I like the Addams Family more because they're not a collection of monsters. They're just weirdos.
Yes. It's more sophisticated in that. I think, like, obviously the Munsters was drawing from Universal Monsters. Yeah. The Addams Family was created in the 30s while they were happening, but maybe not directly inspired. Just like a bunch of creepy weirdos are going to live together. One is vaguely like vampire-ish, like Morticia.
We keep talking about that on Laser Times, and I love bringing up the Universal Monsters because I love them dearly. Check out my new Wolfman set. But that when they were being made at Universal, they were still needed to be licensed because their books had not come into the public domain. Yeah. So that's like Charles Addams, if he wanted to, could not have used the likeness of Frankenstein or Bela Lugosi. True.
Yes.
Yeah, but so I especially love like Sean Astin's father, John Astin.
Oh, he's great.
He's, and he is Gomez.
He's still alive, right?
He is still alive.
I should have saw him in something.
Let's not curse him by mentioning him being alive on this podcast. But I actually had another reason I really liked it because it was brought up recently by this person I follow on Twitter who writes a ton, and she has a podcast too. Merritt Kay is and she did a whole thing looking at like dad. She did a series of podcasts about like pop culture dads, and she did Gomez on one of them, and part of it was rewatching a lot of old episodes of Addams Family, and she was pleasantly surprised by like how much stuff they got on TV then, and like they are in him and Morticia are in a kind of kinky but monogamous married relationship.
Yeah, like kissing up her arm and everything. Yeah. And
there was one line she pulled out from the 64 show, which was her saying, "Oh, don't worry, Gomez. He couldn't hold a candle to you. It'd be interesting for him to try, though."
He was getting off on that, yes. So,
that's a kinky joke.
That is pretty kinky on the 60s.
A kid show on the 60s? Like,
So, the 60s TV show, which this game is based on, ran from 64 to 66. Only 64 episodes. Do you think there'd be a lot more? Munsters ran for 70, so I guess these things had a very short shelf life. Like, unlike the hillbilly explosion of Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction, people could only handle so many monsters in the 60s.
Well, I think those things aren't initially, but a lot of the Universal movies weren't initially popular either, but it's just the nature of television and needing to fill air is what brought the Universal monsters back into the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Needing time to fill air on cable is what brought these old sitcoms that ran two seasons that the networks didn't even like.
Exactly.
Gave them another life.
I am a Nick at Night kid. Every summer I would watch the full run of Andy Griffith Show, Gomer Pyle, Beverly Hillbillies, anything TV would show, I would watch.
I became a man, Adobe Gillis.
When they debuted Mary Tyler Moore, I watched every episode in a row. Like, well, I have to see every Mary Tyler Moore episode.
What else could
it's
you
important.
Do with your time? Exactly.
Well, am I going to hang out with friends or like have crushes on people in the summer? No, I'm going to watch TV. Mary Tyler Moore.
TV is the answer. So yes, that was enough of a preamble. Just to introduce you what the Addams Family is. We're talking about the game, though, which was released in the USA in September of 1989.
So before the movie.
Before the movie. 2 years before the movie.
So they weren't even capitalizing on like getting the TV show rights, being aware of the movie rights.
No, but the movie was in talks, I think, at this time, because we'll get into that later. But obviously, this game if you play it, it feels a little bit older than an 89 game, but I think it's mostly known by the great spooky box art, which the comic artist Casey Green parodied with his great book Graveyard Quest. It's this picture of Fester with a spider crawling down his face. He's like cackling, and there's like lightning striking the Addams Family mansion behind him. It's really iconic, really great.
A stark use of the color orangey yellow.
It's just like a really ghoulish, colors. It's very like eye catching. And
from Sunsoft, the unsung maker of the license game, have made not just passable license games. Maybe the greatest for the NES.
This is definitely one of their lesser games. I mean, it feels like it's definitely based on Blaster Master, the overhead shooting segments.
Which, I love Blaster Master.
Yeah.
Would I have known how to play Blaster Master if everybody in the recess yard wasn't reading Nintendo Powers voraciously and telling... Because it's convoluted and impossible
to figure out. It's a hard game. I think Blaster Master is a hard game, but not nearly as hard as this. I mean, Sunsoft made hard games. I feel like Gremlins 2 is a very hard game, but they're both way better games. And we'll get into Gremlins 2 is a great game.
It's a beautiful game. It's just easy.
You think it's easy?
I just played it.
Wow, okay.
You can see it in my Lego Dimensions video.
I disagree, sir. Quit cross-promoting during my podcast. Wait till the end. So, the one redeeming feature of Fester's Quest is the music, composed by Naoki Kodaka, who did every great Sunsoft soundtrack, Batman, yeah. Journey to Silius, Gremlins 2, Blaster Master, there's like four songs in this game, but they're all really, really good, including an amazing like salsa version of the Addams Family song on the title screen.
Yeah, it is
and
great.
And the ending too, because they had to reuse it, I guess. There was no ending song. They couldn't afford it.
Look, it can only commission so many songs.
And I recently dug up a ton of info on the production of this game. I got it from the Kid Fenris website. I believe his name is Todd Siolek. He was one of my freelancers at 1UP for a while, but he interviewed the two American producers who worked at Sunsoft and got this game made, and it is a very strange American-Japanese cross-production, which could explain some of its problems. Actually, it really does explain some of its problems.
I mean, I guess, you know, they would need an American to tell them to make it.
Exactly.
Because, like, I would think there is no affection for Addams Family in Japan, right?
There really isn't. And the Japanese developers were confused, like, what is this you want us to make? But to get into the information about this game, I'm not sure who directed it, but it is the brainchild of two American producers who still work in the gaming industry. One's name is Richard Robbins. The other's name is Michael Mendheim, and they would later go on to create Mutant League Football. So the creators of Fester's Quest made Mutant League Football a much better game, the only football game I will probably play. And Mendheim did the cover for a lot of other NES games. I just searched, I couldn't find it, but I searched Mendheim NES cover, and I found like Castlevania and Ninja Gaiden. So he could have created those. I'm not sure if he did, but I couldn't find anything. Robbins worked on Desert Strike and Crew Ball, you know, the Motley Crue pinball game. We all enjoy that.
Oh my God.
Mendheim worked on Battle Tanks and Army Men, so they continue working in the industry. So the idea for Fester's Quest came from a dream Robbins had about an idea called Uncle Fester's Playhouse. So this came to him in a dream. It was like the Addams Family was his muse, I guess.
Yeah.
And he created the idea of like the aliens abducting people to make it like have an objective in the game. So it's like, well, we need something for Fester to do. Let's have him rescue people from aliens. So Robbins had to basically court Charles Addams' widow, like play phone tag with her, meet up with her in order to get approval of this idea. And at the same time, she was talking with whoever made the movie about making the movie. So there's a lot of renewed interest in the Addams Family because of baby boomers growing up, I think.
That's impressive, too, of just like going to the Addams estate. Like, I would just imagine some corporation owns it, you have to license it, but that's not how it was for everything in the 80s.
It's sort of like how Dr. Seuss's widow finally broke when they wanted to make the Cat in the Hat movie, and then it's like, we're putting him on everything. Swiffers, bags of chips, like lubricants, everything.
It's one thing to do that, but then like, yep, I said no to everything. I had to wait until the right thing came along. Mike Myers' Cat in the Hat was the thing that swayed you.
I prefer to think of that as the Linda Richmond coffee talk movie. She just turned to a furry at some point in her life because he's doing the same voice.
That's right, and doing jokes about hobos attacking.
Don't listen to the fish. He drinks where he pees. Perfect Seuss.
Oh, God.
So we went over the idea of where this game came from. So, you know, Charles Addams' widow was skeptical of the game. Sunsoft of Japan was skeptical as well, and this game had a very strange production process where it was designed in part in America, so Robbins and Mendheim would create characters and maps, and then they would fly over to Japan to communicate through a translator what they wanted to have done. So they were literally like drawing the maps for the game and giving them to the Blaster Master team and telling them, like, this is how we want our game to be made.
Do you think the Blaster Master team knew, is this beneath us? This is beneath us, right?
I think the quality of this game shows that there was some friction, or that they were like kind of over this idea, or they were just kind of forced into it and didn't want to do it, because the design decisions they made in this game are things that they normally wouldn't do. Like, they're mistakes that shouldn't have been made by a team who has made much better things, I think.
I mean, it feels too like a team that maybe half-assed it a little, or just we gotta get this out.
What are the negatives of Fester's Quest, if we can get this out of the
way? We will get into that when we talk about the game. I want to explain why this game is so bad, or hard to play at least. So Mendheim, one of the co-designers, said, I was an avid game player back then, but as far as game design, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had never designed a game, and this baby was my first. So you can blame your childhood trauma on him. He goes on to say, not having a password system was all my fault. A complete and idiotic oversight. The save system was overlooked by me because we had a debug code in our test builds, which allowed us to jump from level to level and save our progress whenever we wanted.
Doesn't seem unbelievable now.
Yes, and it's like, we never thought to put that into the design doc because the version we were playing had saves in it. So, like, why would we think of that to write it down on paper to give to Japan?
And I'm giving them the bit of... Games are new. Games are newish. But that... Jesus Christ, it's not even one of those things that like, ah, I can't believe we forgot that. We'll patch it in. We'll put it in the next pressing.
Actually,
no.
They made it easier for Europe.
Oh, did
but
they?
But they could not back out of this difficulty problem. They had testers play it. The tester said it was too hard. Mm-hmm. So instead of delaying it, which Sunsoft did not want to do, mm-hmm. their advertising campaign is like, this game is going to kill you. This game is really hard. In fact, I'll play the commercial for it now.
This is one tough video game. Fester's Quest is one tough video game with sinister mazes, deadly traps, hideous monsters, and spooky graphics. But if you make just one mistake, you start all over again. Fester's Quest, the video game from Sunsoft for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Are you good enough?
And the tagline is, this is one tough video game, and you aren't kidding, because this game is really, really hard. One of the hardest games on the NES that is not fundamentally broken, it's just extremely cruel.
Mm. I wonder, too, if that was Japan saying, like, hey, we put in what the Americans told us to. They didn't want a safe system, then we won't do it.
Mm. Yeah, like, not even, like, the formality of, like, a checkpoint is in this game.
Or horrible passwords.
Exactly.
Like, just, like, do that.
Give me an 80-character password instead of starting over from the beginning every time. But, one last thing, this game sold over 1 million copies in the United States.
How is that possible?
I it was just this enigmatic thing, and it was had this like reputation of being a hard game. The cover was very iconic. It was like a cool idea with lots of items.
I can't prove this, but one of the reasons I think this made it into a lot of libraries is that the NES was very hot at this time, and this game I think either launched or immediately became a little cheaper than most games, maybe at like a $29.99 standpoint.
I never bought it, but I definitely rented it at least once, because you see it on the shelf, you're like, I think these Addams Family characters are cool on those old black and white things I saw. This guy seems neat. I'll do it. And yeah.
And like, there are a lot of cool things in the game, but before we go on, I want to ask you guys, what is your experience with the game? As for me, like, it was one of those things where I was like, this game looks neat. I'll rent it. Mm-hmm. And I would try playing it over and over, and I would never make it more than 15 minutes in for the problems we're going to talk about coming up here. So I just kind of bounced off this game over and over, and it was only for this episode that I actually decided to go into it with save states, with a turbo controller, and try to fight my way through it, and that was still a failure. But Chris, like, what was your experience with this game, just real quick?
I just remember playing it at other people's houses, and by the time I actually got myself a copy, no articulate epiphany, just sort of like, I don't need to do this. And I wish I spent more time with it. I really did, because it was one of those games I just assumed, even at the time, everybody would forget about, until like its utter ubiquity. Selling a million copies seems
crazy.
Like insane.
I take it that was probably par for the course for your more popular NES games, though, because it had an install base that was huge. And
yeah.
Just like,
well, just as someone who like 20 years ago was way into buying retro games, this was everywhere. It's like, if you had a fledgling collection, you could make this a part of it very easily, because people were returning it in droves.
God.
Well, the NES, the NES had 90% of the market, so a million for even a well-marketed game can do it.
I love looking at it like a version of the App Store, where I just, on a lark, downloaded two Biker Mice from Mars games. Because you can put anything on the App Store.
You know what, Chris? You have a point. I think this was designed in part, and maybe not intentionally, but a parent could see this in the store and be like, oh, Addams Family, this would be fun. Like, my mom recommended me the Spy vs. Spy game, which sucked because she liked Mad Magazine.
I mean, in both of those cases, I rented them based on the cover art from the Pick and Save. And they both were,
does Bobby like better, Addams Family or Gilligan's Island? They both have NES games.
Gilligan's Island is slightly more manageable.
But I was also kind of a spoiled kid, that so if my mom rented a game and we didn't like it, we were just like, 2 days later we'd return it. We weren't forced to be like, this is what you're playing for a week.
I was screwed. I got purchased two games a year, and I was pretty stuck with them.
Did you get to choose them?
Yes, usually. Okay. Usually I did. Unless you're my dad. Like, I got you Jeopardy NPR edition. It's almost like reading. You suck, Dad!
That's how you learn about Garrison Keillor. All the hard facts about him. So, you said you did play this, Henry?
Yeah, but not very much. Like, I knew it was way too hard, and I didn't want to play hard games, and I didn't love Addams Family enough. Like,
Yeah, I think that's where I was.
The ones that were too hard for me that I'd still never beat but keep going back to is if I loved the character enough. Like, the Game Boy Spider-Man games, they're horrendous. They're so bad.
I would like to nominate the Super Nintendo's Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest pieces of shit in the goddamn universe.
It's awful.
I played the hell out of it because I love those characters.
And most Simpsons games.
Every Simpsons game, except for like two
at this point. And Virtual Springfield.
So I did like academic level research on Fester's Quest.
Thank you, Bobby.
I have a PhD in Fester's Quest after this. I spent so much time on this just for you guys and the listeners out there. Let's talk about the game itself. It's been 20 minutes. Why not talk about the game itself? So this game opens with a great looking cutscene where Fester is moonbathing and a UFO comes and beams up all the people and he looks at the screen and his glasses drop down. It's really cute. Again, they have played a remix of the Adams Family song. It's great. Yes. Yellow was around, but they didn't license that song. But in the manual, it explains that Grandmama put a protective spell on the Addams Family so they would not get abducted. So the only humans you meet in this game are the Addams Family who are all hiding away in houses.
Wow. Okay.
So this game is mostly going to be a lot of complaints, or this episode rather. So if you like the game, I would turn this off immediately if you haven't already. But the flow of the game is really you're above ground and about a third of the game is a sewer level. You transition from above ground to below ground to find these houses that have first-person dungeons which contain one of five bosses.
Oh, God. When I was watching a full playthrough of it before this, I was in shock. Like, wait, is this like a Shin Megami Tensei game or something? What's with this first-person exploration?
There's no combat. There's no enemies. There's no nothing. It's just navigation. Go ahead.
And it just looks so boring. Like, it reminded me of, like, Golgol 13 as a kid, except it was, like, at least that was more focused. And also just the way it draws in the stage, like
just like flashes,
blinking so much, like it give kids seizures.
I guess maybe it was impressive in 1989. It's kind of hard to watch now, but it's just like one of the many weird ideas that are in this game. This feels like a very Japanese idea because we see things like Golgo 13, The Goonies, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde have all these first person segments that just don't seem to belong very well.
I mean, those games in a lot of cases were made by PC gaming nerds in Japan who loved the first-person exploration PC American RPGs.
Every game should be like this, right?
Yeah. this is real exploration.
So
Uncle Fester, though, I can't let it go.
He is the most enigmatic and iconic character, I think. I mean, he puts a damn light bulb in his mouth, and he's got a blunderbuss. It's perfect. I mean, this guy, it came to him in a dream, so it has to have some kind of value. We've been dancing around this, and Chris brought it up, and I shot him down immediately because I wanted to do the preamble, but let's get this out of the way. You take two hits before you die, and when you die, you go back to the beginning of the game, not a checkpoint, not your last door you exited, the beginning of the game. There are no, there's no fast travel, there's no checkpoints, you don't unlock shortcuts. Exactly what we went over, because they did not, they thought they had saves in the game, but the game was produced without saves. Like, oh, that was just in our debug version. Shit, we should have put the saves in. So that's exactly why this game did not have saves and why it was advertised as being a hard game.
Somebody at Sunsoft passive aggressively didn't tell them to put
in think so
saves.
Yeah.
Someone on that team must have realized it needed it and didn't tell somebody, or maybe it got lost in the mail. We are thinking of an age. I'm thinking of inter-office communications from 8 million different channels, and this is back when they would write you a letter or maybe a phone call, a very expensive long-distance phone call.
For this game, the reason why the development was so rushed, though, is because they had to literally fly to Japan every time they had like a meeting or new ideas. Yeah. I guess that's what slowed it down. But Uncle Fester has two life points in his life bar. You can upgrade it to 4, but these are basically impossible to find unless you know where they are. Like, one is behind a hidden wall in a first-person dungeon that is not signaled at all. Another is behind like a piece of tile you have to walk behind that's not signaled at all. It's just like, this game is very, very cruel. The one merciful part of this game, though, is that this game is basically just about accumulating items to withstand the war of attrition it's committing against you. You get to keep all of your items when you die and continue. And you upgrade your gun and your whip through different levels. You get to keep those levels when you die.
That's the nicest they can get, huh?
Yeah. But
can
ultimately,
it be completed quickly?
Like, what's that?
Can it be completed quickly? Was that...
No, this game has RPG-style grinding.
Jesus.
So here's the thing, Chris. Fester has a gun. It goes through one of 8 levels of power, and each level has a different effect. Most of these effects are sine waves, a sine wave pattern, which makes it impossible to hit enemies. And when you're in a sewer, you're in cramped corridors, so your gun just fires at the wall and cancels out.
Jesus.
Unless you're standing on the exact right pixel you need to be standing on. So... The first part of the game is grind for 20 minutes, get the top level of the gun. Now you can play the rest of the game, because good luck fighting any bosses. Good luck fighting the waves of enemies that are thrown at you. It is just like a monotonous, tedious slog.
Yeah.
And it does feel like it was made out of spite.
Yeah, it was famous for a time as like the first thing people would say is like, oh, this is the worst game ever. And then, you know, the Sean Babies of the world dug a lot deeper to find truly the worst games ever. But Fester's Quest was a widely known, it was a lot of people in our generation's first pick of worst games.
I think
ever.
So, just because of how much it sold, the way it was covered in magazines and stuff like that. So a lot of this game is simply, there's maybe like six enemies in the game, maybe five. It's just like you're walking down either straight streets or straight corridors, and the game just throws enemy after enemy after enemy at you. And they take so many hits. In fact, the instruction manual recommends you play with a turbo controller. Wow. But even when I was playing with an emulator with turbo settings on, I'm like, it seriously is taking this long to kill a green frog? Like, God help you if you run into a green frog. You're going to be standing there for 20 seconds firing like projectile after projectile into that thing. And the bosses are even worse. I'm getting really fired up. The bosses are these horrible abominations that, again, a war of attrition. They're essentially their AI, put that in quotes. Their AI is designed to follow you as you walk around. So you are kind of stuck directly in front of them as they go through one pattern. They do one, every boss does one thing. And fighting the bosses is just really putting up with doing the same pattern over and over and over again. Like just like dodging the same whip, dodging the same projectiles. It is such a tedious war of attrition. I am angry at Fester's Quest, by the way. I can't stand it. So I will say one good thing about this game is that there are some inspired things about it. A cool idea is that they have a lot of items like in Zelda and Metal Gear. You have a bulb that is essentially your torch in a dungeon. Another like RPG inspired thing that actually is like one of two things that ties into the show itself.
Yes.
A key which opens houses and first person mazes. A noose which summons Lurch to kill all the enemies on the screen. Vice grips which cure status conditions, which are the worst part of this game. There's a certain enemy that if you shoot at them, they will like have mosquitoes fly out. If you get hit with a mosquito, Fester moves at half speed until you heal that condition. And he already moves incredibly slow as it is. Like you can barely dodge enemies as is.
Can't find medicine?
Exactly.
Like, wow.
It is really RPG-like in a strange way.
But in a cruel way. Just
a
to
very
make it
cruel
worse.
Way. You can't gain levels, which is like that should be part of this. Yeah. If this is what you're doing. But
it's all the negatives of RPGs. I had heard this was how Shigesato Itoi sold Earthbound, or Mother, to Miyamoto, because Miyamoto wasn't into RPGs, and Itoi said, well, what's good for people who aren't good at games, they like RPGs, because the more you play, the easier it gets, because you level up, and that idea sold Miyamoto.
Call of Duty.
So when you take out the leveling up thing to RPGs, like it doesn't even get easier from grinding. You know?
Yeah, it just gets more tedious. You learn nothing except to hate the game itself. More items. We have the missiles, which are the best items in the game because they essentially lock onto an enemy and all fire at them, which is a good way to kill some bosses.
In the gameplay full playthrough I watched, that's how the guy beat the final boss. He just stood in the corner and just shot all of them.
He found the one safe spot.
5 minutes!
It takes forever. Every boss takes forever, and some of them have shields, which makes them even harder to hit. It's crazy. So, more items. We have TNT, which are exactly like Link's bombs. We have potions that heal you. There's a very limited amount in the game. There's a finite amount in the game, I believe.
Wow.
And an invisibility potion was essentially just there to help you fight bosses. Like, you're going to suck at this. There's no way to avoid getting hit. Down one of these, and you're like invincible for 10 seconds, and you'll be fine for that 10 seconds. But you better pop another one as soon as it ends, because otherwise you're screwed. So, yeah, I mean, this game has a lot of bad ideas. One of them is, you need to build up your whip and gun to max levels to do anything in this game. The problem is enemies, the vast amount of enemies that come at you, some of them drop power downs. the red gun and whip icons are power downs. So when an enemy, when you fire a bunch of enemies and take out a group of enemies, they all drop power ups and you see a power down, you have to wait for them all to disappear before you can move on. Wow. Otherwise, if you touch it, you'll power down and you'll have to go through that all again. So there's a lot of waiting in this game too. It's crazy.
That's like that takes the poison mushroom thing from Super Mario Lost Levels and makes it in the entire game. Like, ugh.
I did just look up on a website I just discovered and want to plug it if Retronauts fans haven't heard of it. HowLongToBeat.com. A general consensus on how long certain games take to beat, and it says even if your MLG is fuck, this is going to take 2 hours to beat, no matter what.
Wow.
2 hours, especially if you put in, let's say, 1 hour and 45 minutes, and you die. You just have to do it again.
It's 2 hours.
You
got
to do it again.
Yeah. I can't imagine if you die in the last boss, getting kicked back to the beginning of the game, having to go all the way walk all the way back to the last boss. That's I'm mad.
There
I've
is
never
no
done
leisure.
It
says even as a completionist, it would take you an extra 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So there are some professional things about this game. Like I think it looks okay. It doesn't look that bad. The music is again really good. The problem is there's not a lot of variety of environments. You're either above ground or in the sewers. And like a third of the game are in these awful maze sewers where, again, if you have anything but the highest powered gun, you can't kill enemies in corridors. They'll just run into you and kill you. And this is where the game is at its cruelest. Like, again, sewer levels always suck, and this is no different. In fact, this is like the epitome of sewer level hell.
You'd wish to go back to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sewers.
Please let me know when you want to talk about Elf.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about the Elf game sooner or later, but I'm almost done here. I mean, there's only so much to complain about in this game because it's only an hour-long game, but like I feel, like I said before, Sunsoft of Japan, their heart wasn't in it. I feel like they didn't like being told what to do by Americans who were just like, this is popular, make it. I had a dream about it. Like, if a guy came to you and said, make my dream, it's like, your dream is weird, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
Especially when you probably don't already trust outside executives.
Exactly.
To come in.
Yeah. And I mean, these guys, they were Sunsoft of America's, like, dudes, and they helped write the Blaster Master story. I think one of them did, maybe Robbins, because it was called Meta Fight or something in Japan, and there was no story about a frog jumping down a hole. And by the way, Blaster Master's frogs are in this game, which is a weird connection.
Why bother making a new sprite?
So, I just want to wrap up by saying, like, it doesn't really capture the show. I mean, the song is in it, Fester's in it, but he could be anyone. This game could be anything. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter that it's him. It's like these weird H.R. Giger, like, spooky designs. Mm-hmm. The designs of the enemies are cool. The bosses look really neat, like straight out of Blaster Master. But there's only a few items that feel festery, like the vice grips and the light bulb and just, like, I guess his blunderbuss, which is a connection to the show, I believe. Like, he threatened to shoot people with his blunderbuss, which I don't remember.
Yeah, I saw a picture of it. I was like, oh, I guess he did have that. I feel like I'd seen him holding it, but
where did that thing get its name?
Genevieve.
The blunderbuss?
The blunderbuss?
Yeah. The blunderbuss is named Genevieve, and I discovered that today.
No, I just meant the blunderbuss in general. Why would you... Why is this called a blunderbuss? Is it a bad gun?
Well, that's for my etymology podcast coming up next. We'll discover it then.
Hey, look, I was right to ask. One of you probably has a stupid fact.
I mean,
like that.
I would rather spend the 2 hours trying to beat this game just watching Adam's Family or Adam's Family Values again.
I'm going to go hot take. You ready for this?
Go for it.
There is only one good Adam's Family game. Period.
Pinball.
Bob, you guessed correctly on the first try.
It's only the best pinball game ever, right?
Yeah, electrocuting yourself with Fester? Come on.
I was disappointed when I found out it wasn't electrocution. I was like, is this going to vibrate? What the hell?
Bullshit. Yeah. Electrocute me. Come on.
I pay money to be zapped here, people. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I want to know from our listeners. I feel like this is if you play this game, it's sort of a shared trauma we have. We talk about that with the Ninja Turtles game. I think this is far worse. Like, that game is far more manageable than this. And I just feel like I just have nothing but pain when I remember this game. I wanted it to be good. It's like Star Tropics where it's like this game has cool things in it, but it's inapproachable for me. And I want to know at home, if you're listening out there.
Love Star Tropics.
It's good, but it's also hard. Not as hard as this, though. But if you're listening at home, did you play this game? Did you beat it? If you beat this game legitimately, I want to know. I want to recruit you for my super soldier army because I don't know how any human could have done this. It's just crazy.
I mean, this must have sold a lot of game genies.
Oh dear, yeah. Yes, and again, if you watch a Let's Play, all the Let's Players are quick saving and doing like turbo controllers too, because they're like, I don't got time for this shit either.
Yeah, no
I'm a
way.
Let's Player, yeah.
I mean, well, I would love to see a non-tool assisted Fester's Quest playthrough.
I would love to see like that at Awesome Games Done Quick or Summer Games Done Quick.
Yeah.
I want to meet that man and find out what's gone wrong with him in his life because something happened to devote yourself to Fester. And closing, thanks for listening, folks. I think I've said more than anyone has ever said about Fester's Quest in one lifetime. I wanted to dig as deep as I could. Thanks to Kid Femris again for that great interview. A lot of insight into this game and really why it went wrong. Like the producer said, we didn't know what we were doing. And clearly Japan didn't give a crap about their idea. They wanted to go make Batman or something, yeah. which would be the next year. I think Batman the game was 90, right?
Yeah. It was 1 year after the film, which was 89. So yeah.
Like the gulf of difference between Batman and Fester's Quest is like...
Or even Gremlins
unimaginable.
2, which is
yeah.
a licensed game that's top-down and kind of similar.
And it's beautiful.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, if I may get to plugs early, I did want to say, if you like the soundtrack of this, our friend Brett Elston on his podcast, VG Empire.
We
did a tribute to the Batman Sunsoft game, so he talks a ton about that composer on it. So,
yeah, same composer as this. So, yeah, thanks to that guy for doing the one good thing about this game. Ooh. And better luck next time to the producers who went on to have a great career, and I think they kickstarted Mutant League Football
I think they kickstarted Mutant Football League.
Oh, different.
That is beautiful.
Different idea, do not sue. Please. So, yes, thank you so much. This has been Retronauts. I've been your host, Bob Mack. You can find me on Twitter. Where's the sound effect, Chris? You don't have it at the ready?
Where's my computer?
I don't know.
Dave takes it home now.
Jeez. So, yes, you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and you'll find this blog post at Retronauts.com, where I'll have some interesting links for you to read and click on, including that interview, and you won't find this at US Gamer because I don't work there anymore. I will be working at Fandom.com. Is that correct? Is that the name of the site? I forget. Okay, Henry's shaking his head, so yes, that's my new workplace. I'll be there from November 1st on, so visit me there, read my content there. I'll be doing fun stuff. It'll be a lot of fun, but from then on, you will find my blog posts about my episodes on Retronauts.com, so please go there. Henry, where can we find you? Oh, wait, I just said it.
The same place as you, fandom.com, powered by Wikia. Also, you can find me on Twitter at HENEREYG on Twitter, and sorry, I gotta hit the same things every time, but...
It's iambic pentameter.
Also, you can find all my hot takes on Twitter, of course, but also, I'm on the Talking Simpsons podcast every week with one Mr. Bob Mackey and Chris Antista.
Oh,
this was the Talking Simpsons crew here.
Wow! Fester!
But also, I just did an episode of Laser Time as well, and I'm on all those things,
you did.
Which are brought to you by Patreon. Patreon.com/lasertime, right, Chris? Yeah,
yes. We are almost 100% listener supported. We just did a show about, we did a thing about horror by the numbers. We tried to figure out what is the most successful horror franchise, who's had the most movies, and who has the highest body count. The answer is usually Jason, yeah. Except for
he wants it more.
You will not believe how high the. I don't want to ruin it. The Exorcist, adjusted for inflation, is not only makes it the highest grossing horror movie ever. It makes it the highest grossing franchise ever.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Purely based on the strength of the first
incredible.
Film. The whole world saw that film.
That's a spooky fact from the devil.
I don't know. I was very proud of it. But we also did another one on horror comedies. Like I did realize, those are the horror movies I actually like. If this is an authentic home invasion movie, I don't care as much as if you're a priest... Roundhouse kicking a zombie and Dead Alive, or Gremlins, or Ghostbusters.
Evil Dead 2 is my favorite horror comedy. By far.
I'm in the middle of Ash versus Evil Dead, and it is pure joy.
I need
joy.
To watch that.
It is pure joy, Bobby.
And yeah. I forgot to mention, we have a Patreon too, which is why you're listening to this episode. These episodes are a Patreon goal that we hit, the off-week episodes, so I hope you're enjoying this. If you want to give to our Patreon, go to patreon.com/retronauts. That pays for our entire show. We cannot do it without your Patreon money, and just $1 a month could do a lot for us. So please, if you can, give us a buck a month. We'll really appreciate it. It would really appreciate it. Cousin It would really appreciate it. There we go. So, yes, we'll see you next time with a brand new full-length episode of Retronauts. Later, folks.
Mamushka.